The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Todd Starnes Show, sponsored by Legacy Precious Metals. There's never been a better time to invest in precious metals. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Welcome to the Todd Starnes Show. I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Todd Starnes. He will be joining us somewhere along the line here. To tell us where he is and what he's doing. He's fine. No need to worry about Todd. Yes, he's coming back. Whenever I fill in for someone, a lot of times I'll get messages on Twitter or on Facebook or something like that. I'll get these messages like, is Todd coming back? I'm like, or whomever it happens to be is filling the blank for who I'm sitting in for coming back. I'm like, yes, they're coming. When are they coming back? I'm like, am I that awful? Seriously? I'm that bad that you, like, you can't wait to get rid of me. But Todd is coming back, so he's going to be joining us to tell us when he is coming back and where he is. We've got a great show planned for you. These guys have done a great job. Congressman Ralph Norman will be joining us in about an hour. Following him will be Caroline Leavitt. She's running for election to the U.S. House to represent New Hampshire's 1st Congressional District, and there are a lot of Republicans running to challenge the incumbent Democrat. And following that, Congressman Pat Fallon will be joining us. Immigration, he's out of Texas, so there's a ton on immigration to discuss. And then after that, towards the end of the show, a friend of mine will be joining us. He is a volunteer firefighter, and he was at Ground Zero. He went to Ground Zero to help, you know, comb through the rubble looking for survivors. But he has a really cool story. So it's a little bit of a different 9/11 story, so I thought it would be cool to share with you. He came into possession of gifts from firefighters in Australia. And I thought it'd be interesting to talk about the culture of volunteering. And I'm going to go into that with you. We'll talk about that here on the show as well, and the culture of volunteering. And, you know, where do we go if we don't have our volunteers? Like, what happens to our communities if we don't have our volunteers? So we're going to talk about that as well coming up here on the Todd Starnes Show. Oh, you know what I should do? I'm going to turn my ringer off on my phone. I thought that was a good thing. All right. Let's start off talking about, because, you know, we're in silly season. We're coming into an election. There is a Republican candidate in Arizona running for Arizona Senate. His name's Blake Masters. And Masters says that the GOP is out of touch with ordinary Americans. And I want to ask you if that's true. And I'll go through and tell you why he says that and my own thoughts on that. But when you hear the GOP is out of touch with ordinary, everyday Americans, do you agree with that statement? 844-747-8868. 844-747-8868. Are Republicans out of touch with everyday Americans? And I'll tell you, I think in general, I think politicians, once they've been in D.C. for quite some time, they're out of touch with ordinary, everyday Americans. I've lived there. I worked there. And they talk about the D.C. bubble. I kid you not, it is real. Everybody works for the company. You know what I mean? The firm? Everybody works for the firm, like the Brits. With the royal family. It's the same thing. Everybody works for the government. Everybody's got their own, you know, stake in the game. Everybody's got their own dog in the fight. And it's really, if you're not that into the party, whatever you want to call it, if you're not into that, regardless of which side you're on, you're going to hate D.C. I just found people, I find the culture, and I think this is why they become out of touch. The culture is so much about, hi, nice to meet you, while they shake their hand and smile at you, but they're looking over your shoulder to see if there's someone more important behind you. You know, it's all about connections. It's all about getting ahead career-wise. It's all about getting ahead money-wise. It's all about benefiting me, under the guise of working for someone else. You know, and it's the lobbyists, it's the politicians. It's just a very slimy, incestuous pool. It's a gene pool, and the genes need to be washed out every now and then, and that hasn't been happening. So 844-747-8868 is my number. So Blake Masters says that Republicans, including himself, were in agreement about a lot of the key issues like low taxes, fewer regulations. But he says he, though, is different because he's more skeptical of foreign intervention. And he says, I'm more vocal about crime and immigration than some of my counterparts. Now, he's running against Arizona Senator Mark Kelly, who is leading him by like 47 to 45 percentage points. So it's a lot. All right. But the race has been, Cook Political Report, which is nonpartisan, has labeled the race a toss-up. Which I find interesting because the polls are saying that he's losing 45 to 47 points. And this is why I don't trust polls. I think you have to look at them. I think you have to talk about them. I think you have to, you know, give them a little bit, pay attention to them somewhat to a certain degree. But I don't think you put full faith and you know, bet everything you have on something that is said in a poll. We saw that with the 2016 election and look what happened, right? Hillary Clinton was beating Trump. It was going to be a landslide. And that's not at all what happened. So I think you have to take some of it with a little bit of a grain of salt. Oh, you know, so we're going to come back. We're going to talk about this. And I want to know if you think the GOP is out of touch. But first, the man himself, the man for whom this show is named, Todd Starnes is on the line. Todd, hi. Well, welcome to your own show.
It's great to be on my show, Mary Walters, and greetings from Interstate 20 somewhere in Mississippi.
Do I even ask? Did someone send you out on an errand and you just decided not to come back? What?
Right. Yeah, no. So it's sort of crazy. And you know how it is this time of year, speaking engagement season. And so I'm speaking at a dinner tonight. In Atlanta for the Faith and Freedom Coalition. We'll probably end up meeting a lot of our listeners from WDUN tonight. And then on Thursday, I'm speaking at the Family Research Council's big national convention, which is meeting in Atlanta as well. So I'll actually be broadcasting the show tomorrow and Wednesday from Atlanta, but today's a travel day, and I've had a lot of fun listening to you so far. Great show.
Well, thank you. I've just started, but there's plenty of time for me to trip and wind up, you know, in front of the door, splayed out before the end of the show. So there's always time for that. So tell us, can you just tell us a little bit about the Faith and Freedom event that you're going to tonight?
Sure. This is the organization that was founded by Ralph Reed, who created the original Christian Coalition back in the day. And they have been very instrumental in getting President Trump elected. As a matter of fact, in the last election cycle, they registered more people to vote than the entire Republican Party did. So these folks are really grassroots. They're boots on the ground. And, of course, this is the Georgia chapter that I'm going to be speaking to. And they are knee-deep right now. You mentioned the polling data out there. There are a couple of major races looking at the governor's race where Brian Kemp going up against Stacey Abrams. And also another big race is the U.S. Senate race, Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker. And the polling data has actually now has Herschel Walker moving ahead of Raphael Warnock in that race. Again, I'm with you. I don't put too much stock in the polls, but it does give you sort of a good weather, you know, sort of a barometer of maybe what voters are thinking and where they are at that moment in time.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about that. I'm going to ask Congressman Ralph Norman about this a little bit later. But since we're talking about the polls here, you know, this race in Arizona with Blake Masters, where he's polling 45 to 47% behind Mark Kelly. But the Cook Political Report has labeled the race a toss up. So it says to me that Cook thinks that there's a chance that Blake Masters could win this. Yet the GOP has polled their ad buys for Masters in Arizona for the month of August. Why does the GOP do that so often to candidates? The Democrats would be pouring more money in, and the Republicans are like, oh, yeah, well, we don't have a lot of money, so we're going to take the money away from you and just give up. They just walk away.
Yeah, that's a big issue, and we saw them do the same thing a couple of weeks ago. It was a big story where they pulled some funding out of advertisement money out of Georgia and Pennsylvania, a couple of other battleground states, I believe Wisconsin too. And it's a head scratcher, and it tells me that the Republicans don't have a lot of extra money on hand. Pardon me while I just hit the emergency lane there. I was merging into traffic. So I just don't think they've got the money and the resources those Democrats have. That question was actually asked over the weekend of Rick Scott. Where is all the money? What have you guys been doing with the money?
Yeah.
And we've been asking that question on the local level too, Mary.
Yeah, where is my, this is why, and I said this to, I believe on your show a couple weeks ago, to one of the congressmen that you had on the show, and I said, you know, this is why I don't give to the Republican Party. First of all, I'm not a registered Republican. That's number one. But number two, my husband and I donated once to Mitt Romney when he was running against Barack Obama, and I got more mail back asking me for more money than I sent you. You know, they wasted the money on emailing me or sending me actual mail asking me for more money than I actually sent them. Why would I want to do that? It's just, you know, I get that they're like, oh, we've got a donor on the line, we're going to keep asking. But after a while, you have to look at, are you wasting the money? I'm with you. I don't understand where this money is going. And I think that's a question that needs to be answered. And the other thing, at least from my perspective, is I think that people don't want to donate to losers. I don't want to donate money to a group of people who just throw the towel in and go, well, we're not going to win this race anyway, so we're out. And we're just going to pull the money from someone who can win, and they just walk away. Why do I want to support that?
You know, Mary, it seems to me at this point that there really needs to be a united front here among all the candidates. If you're running on the Republican ticket, if it's at the national, state, or local level, it needs to be about crime, crime, crime.
Yes.
This is the issue that is resonating with people. And, of course, you know, our show originates from Memphis, Tennessee. We've been in the national news for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And I know that's a shocker, but honestly, the reason, I mean, look, we've got those kinds of murders happening every day in Memphis. So this is nothing new for us. But if the Republicans cannot win the hearts and the minds, they are not going to do well. And they're going to have trouble retaking the House of Representatives. The Senate may be completely out of reach if they do not mobilize around the issues that people are talking about at the diners and around the dinner table.
And that's to Blake Masters' point here that I was talking about, is that he says that the GOP is out of touch. Would you do me a favor, Todd? Could you run the GOP? Because I think you could do such a better job than Mitch McConnell. Seriously, I you're out here, you talk to the people, you're out among the, you know, that, and it's exactly, you put your finger on it. It's they don't know what is happening and what is important to us. They've lost touch with us, and that's really dangerous. That's a losing strategy.
Mary, I can tell you personally, Todd Starnes, who is a strong supporter of the Second Amendment, I've actually had to go out of my way to get gas in a safer part of town. I don't drive on the interstate, I-240, because there are so many concerns about people getting shot, you know, with the snipers on the interstate. And these are average Americans. We're all having to deal with these kinds of issues. It is not right. And for the politicians, for the lawmakers to completely ignore this, for example, the governor of Tennessee, Bill Lee, a Republican, he's a soft on crime guy. That's not going to resonate. And that is not going to inspire Republicans to get their butts out and go vote on Election Day. And that's what we've got to do.
Exactly. That is so true. And I look at this, and I know I'll let you go because I know you're driving, and you should not talk and drive at the same time. Just very quickly, the Democrats are also very out of touch. So why do they have money?
Well, that's, you know why? Because we give it to them. All these conservatives, we go to Disney World. And what does Disney World do with our money? They turn it around and they fund these left-wing activists. We do the same thing when we go to the movies, when we buy the music. We're funding all of this stuff, and that's why the Democrats do have all of this this money, and they're very effective. The Democrats understand the base of their party, and the base of their party are radical progressives, and they got a load of cash to spend.
Interesting, because they usually don't work, so that's interesting that they have so much money. Oh, Todd, have a wonderful, safe trip. Good luck tonight with your speech. I'm sure you're going to do wonderful and be very inspiring when you speak to our friends in Georgia. Thank you so much for joining me. I love when you call. This is the first time you've ever called in when I filled in for you. I love this. We should do this more often.
The show sounds great. By the way, I'm driving through Tupelo right now, so a shout out to the king of rock and roll.
There you go. All right. Thank you so much, Todd. Have a safe trip, and we look forward to you coming back.
Thanks, Mary.
The number 844-747-8868, 844-747-8868. More coming up on the Todd Starnes Show.
We're all feeling the pain at the pump and at the grocery store, too. The market is plunging, and Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. But even worse, seniors are struggling to survive. It's not time to panic, but it is time to act. My friends at AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens, will help you save money on things like cell phone plans, travel, and restaurants. But AMAC does much more than offer senior discounts. Your membership will support their nonprofit AMAC Action, which takes the challenges against our Constitution and a free market straight to Capitol Hill. Joining is easy. Just go to amac.us/starnes to start saving today. 2.3 million Americans have already joined AMAC, and you should too. AMAC cares about you and America, so save money and support conservative causes. Go to amac.us/starnes. It's only $16 per year, and great news, anyone can join. Go to amac.us/starnes. That's amac.us/starnes.
Did anybody else just want to sing the Pina Colada song? I was almost just burst out into song. It's a cute song. I was tired of my lady. All right. I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Todd Starnes, and not a professional singer, as you can tell. You can follow me if you go to YouTube, look up Mary Walter Radio. I have a podcast every Thursday night, 7:15 p.m. Eastern time. And later today, I will be on Newsmax television at 4:35 Eastern time on the Chris Salcedo Show. I do that pretty much every Monday, but the time changes. So somewhere between like 4:15 and 4:45 Eastern time on the Chris Salcedo Show on Newsmax TV. You know, we were just talking to Todd. So I got to tell you about one of Todd's favorite things, Life Change Tea. And they're having their big summer sale. You buy three, you get one free. So why not make a commitment to feel your very best? Because it's super easy. Life Change Tea is an amazing, natural, gentle cleanse that you can use daily for optimum gut health. Todd drinks it every single day. It is the right combination of 12 herbs. It comes in three delicious flavors. There's natural, there's peppermint, and there's pomegranate. Life Change Tea has been around since 2007, and it is made right here in the good old U.S. of A. It's easy to brew. You keep it in your fridge. You drink it every day. In the summer, you'll always want to have a big glass. And listen, summer's not over yet. That's why Todd drinks Life Change Tea daily. Go to getthetea.com to order yours today. Use the discount code TODD10 to get an additional $10 off. Plus, they're going to give you free shipping. That is over a $50 savings. And with the cost of everything today, that's insane. That's great. Use the discount code TODD. Go to getthetea.com, discount code TODD. And the number 10 for your big savings. My number here is 844-747-8868. Talking about whether the GOP is out of touch. Is the Republican Party out of touch with everyday Americans? And Todd had mentioned Memphis, right? And Memphis in the news for all the wrong reasons. But, you know, Nancy Pelosi and the Republicans, too. They don't live the life that you and I live. They, not all of them, but there are quite a few of them who get quite used to the perks that come along with being a congressman, And so it's hard for them. And coming up, we're going to speak with Congressman Ralph Northam in about half an hour. And I'm going to ask him about this, about the GOP being out of touch. And how often do they go back home? And why is it so easy for them to get out of touch with you and me and then really no longer represent us? It's coming up. I got more on the Todd Stern Show.
MyPillow is having their biggest sheet sale of the year. Y'all have helped build MyPillow into an amazing company that it is today. Now Mike Lindell, our good friend, wants to give back exclusively to our listeners. The Percale and Giza Dream bed sheet sets are available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they're all on sale for as low as $29.98 with our listener promo code. You better order now, because when they're gone, they're gone. The Percale and Giza Dream sheets are breathable, and they have a cool, crisp feel. And they come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. So don't miss out on this incredible offer. There is a limited supply, so you better order right now. Call 1-800-986-3994 and use the promo code STARNS. That's 1-800-986-3994. Or you can go to MyPillow.com/STARNS. That's MyPillow.com/STARNS and use the promo code STARNS.
Hey, welcome to the Todd Stern Show. I'm Mary Welter, sitting in for Todd. Todd will be back later this week. He is traveling to Georgia, and then he's doing two speeches in Georgia to a couple different groups, but he'll be back later this week. 844-747-8868 is my number. I had mentioned earlier, we've got our guest coming up. We have Congressman Ralph Northam. Norman. I keep saying Northam because I keep thinking of the former governor of Virginia, Ralph Norman. He'll be joining us in about half an hour. And then in an hour from now, Caroline Leavitt will be joining us. She's running in the U.S. House to represent the House in from New Hampshire. So she'll be joining us. That's a great race up there. Congressman Pat Fallon will be joining us. And then a friend of mine is going to be joining us who is a volunteer firefighter from New Jersey. And he was at Ground Zero. And he helped in the cleanup and the aftermath of that. And he has some interesting stories to tell also about the Fellowship of Firefighters. And he came in possession of some gifts from Australia, from Australian firefighters to American firefighters. And it kind of plays into something that I've noticed. And I'm curious to find out if you volunteer. I want to know if you volunteer. And if you do, you don't have to tell us exactly what you do if you don't want to. That's fine. But I'm curious if you, and why do you volunteer? Because I've noticed, and maybe I'm crazy, nobody volunteers anymore. It's the way I've been raised. I know so many people who would just rather write a check, which I'm not saying that that's a bad thing by any stretch of the imagination. Some people can't volunteer due to time constraints, they don't have the ability to volunteer, maybe physically. Although I'm a big fan that everybody can do something. You know, you sit at your computer and you do the email list or the call list for them or whatever it happens to be, you know, do the notes of a meeting or something. But I think everybody can do something. And I'm curious as to why you think that's not happening. 844-747-8868. I have definitely noticed that I live in a little town, like 3,500 people, that's including the little kids. It's a seasonal town, so during the season, there are a lot more people here. Our population doubles after the season. It goes back to just the locals. But it takes a lot. You know, we have a volunteer fire department. We have a volunteer rescue squad. We people who run for office to work in our town. Granted, it's like being the president of a really large high school class, but with a lot more problems, right? Sanitation, water, garbage collection, all that stuff. But it's not a ton of people. But they basically volunteer. Do they get some perks? Yes. Do they make some money? Yes. But it's you're not living off of it. That's for darn sure. And it's a lot of work. I used to do a house tour in our town. And because there are a lot of historic homes here, and new construction as well, and some very grand houses. And so it was a tradition. It benefited the only church in town, which is a Catholic church. And the church has a community center, parish center, with a kitchen and a basketball court, you know, typical Catholic parish center with a great basketball court with a stage at one end, of course, and a big kitchen. And our town, our school in town, doesn't have a kitchen, so the kids either bring a sandwich or they go to the local pizzeria or they go home for lunch. But they're allowed to use that. That parish center is where all the events in town happen, regardless of denomination or anything. That's where it all happens. So everybody in town would support the house tour. The committee, we had a Jewish woman, we have a Muslim woman on the committee. The rest were all members of the parish. But the police would volunteer their time to do traffic control for everybody walking around town to go on this house tour. And then the money would benefit the parish for upkeep for the parish center and other things. And it was a great thing. But the generation that did that last, you know, Hurricane Sandy hit, kind of wiped out a lot of the houses, and the house tour is no more. And we've talked about resurrecting it. But me and about two other people who are a little bit younger than I are the youngest people around to be on the committee. There's no one behind us who is stepping up to do it. And it's just weird. Is it because we didn't raise our kids to volunteer? I was raised that way. 844-747-8868. And what happens to our communities when people don't volunteer anymore? Things like that house tour are now gone. So the church doesn't have that benefit. But not only that, it was a great event. It was a townwide event and everyone got involved. And so it really brought the community together. To me, that was really important. We just had this past weekend our town's fireman's fair. Again, a volunteer fire department, and one of their biggest fundraisers, if not the biggest fundraiser, is this fair that they have for 4 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And they've got rides, and they've got and it's not a big fair at all. It's held in the parking lot. It's not a huge fair. And they have to build a new fire department because it got destroyed in Sandy. And they're just getting the funds together besides what FEMA gave them to be able to do that, because it's got a whole bunch of stuff has to be done, obviously, to raise things up to the second floor and all that kind of stuff. So my husband and I volunteered at it because they don't have enough people to run the games. And we worked every single night, except for Saturday, but we were elsewhere. But we worked. Our help was greatly welcomed because they can't get enough volunteers. Everybody goes to the fair. It's a great, fun community event. But nobody wants to put the time in. And I don't understand. It was a fun thing to do for us. We worked, did the water gun, that game, you know, and because somebody always wins. So it's a great thing. And it's fun. And the kids love it. But they don't have enough volunteers. And I think it hurts, obviously, because things go away. You wind up having to pay for a paid fire department, a paid rescue squad. And those things cost money. And now it's a government-run operation. And obviously, volunteer departments have a certain connection to the government, and they do get some money, and there is input, and there's regulations and all of that, and they do their training and the whole bit, and I get it. But at least I think it keeps it in the community. I want to keep my volunteer fire department and my volunteer rescue squad. But what happens when those goes away besides the increase in cost? I think you got people who are now who don't live in your community. It takes away that feeling. And I think that's so important. And that's kind of when I think of, you know, small town America, when I think of outside of, you know, New York and Philadelphia and the two coasts, like I think outside of there, I think of these little neighborhoods, even in like Memphis, you have little neighborhoods in whatever town you city you happen to be in Atlanta, there's still little neighborhoods. Excuse me. And when you get into the suburbs, you know, it's more even smaller. They may have more property, but everybody knows everybody. And there is a certain value to that, I think. 844-747-8868. Do you volunteer? What do you do? And did you teach your kids to volunteer? And what happens when we don't have these volunteers? I mean, everybody ever think of that? I don't know if people even think about that. And my parents raised us as kids that you volunteered, you gave back. And so we did, we had an organization where I grew up. It was a rural area and there was no food bank or anything, but the churches, all the denominations, the Jewish temple, the Protestant churches, Methodist, Catholic, got together and they had a warehouse and they had where food was donated by the members of those parishes and those churches and temples. And then you, the members would go down and you would pack bags, you would pack meals, you that's what we would do. And so my parents always took us for Thanksgiving, even as kids, and because we were capable of getting this off the shelf. Like you always had, you know, my brother was in charge of green beans or something like that off the shelf. And we packed these boxes and my parents wanted us to know that there were those, you know, you may think your life's terrible because I'm not buying you a new bike or we can't afford to go to Disney World or something like that. But there are kids out there who don't have food. And that message was drilled home to us by volunteering. We also, our church had a big fair, you know, for the kids, and the parents did gambling downstairs. They had like a casino thing downstairs for the parents, and the kids had the upstairs, and we volunteered. You know, I made cotton candy with my mother for days at this fair. We also worked, my parents had us work the Special Olympics. And we went every year. And we ran the food booth with all the stuff from McDonald's because they donated it every year. And that's what we did. And we learned to give back. And I think it gave us a very good foundation. And I saw my brother continue that with his kids. They got a lot more than we did, but they still had that volunteering and that giving back. I think if you go to a religious school, I went to Villanova, it's a Catholic school. If you belong to any kind of organization on campus, you had X number of service hours that you had to perform with a list of certified like groups that you could volunteer with. And everybody did it, and it was a big campus thing. So I think all that pulls the community together, if that makes sense. You know, I worked with people doing some of the volunteer stuff in college that I was never... My path would never really have crossed with that person because we were in different majors, we were in different schools, you know, liberal arts versus business or engineering, whatever. So your paths don't really cross with them, especially if you lived off campus. And so I got to know more people. So my circle grew because of the volunteering. And I just thought that's so important. And I'm so sad to see less and less of it. And I kind of blame the generation that raised the current generation that doesn't volunteer. And I don't think it's that far behind me either. I think it started before just me. It's my generation. If you want to chime in, 844-747-8868. 844-747-8868. You know, we're all feeling the pain at the pump, not just the pump, but as we're talking about, you know, costs are going to go up if you don't have volunteers, right? So it's not just going to be the pump and the grocery store. It's going to be other facets of life as well. The market is plunging. Americans are living more and more paycheck to paycheck. I don't have to tell you that. But seniors are also struggling to survive, but it's not time to panic. It's time to act. Todd's friends at AMAC, A-M-A-C, the Association of Mature American Citizens, will help you save money on things like cell phone plans, travel, restaurants. But AMAC does much more than offer senior discounts. Your membership will support their nonprofit, AMAC Action, and that takes the challenges against our Constitution and a free market right to Capitol Hill. Joining super easy. Just go to amac.us/starns and start saving today. 2.3 million Americans have already joined AMAC, and you should too, because AMAC cares about you and they care about America. So save money and support some great conservative causes while you're doing it. Go to amac.com/starns. It's only $16 a year and anyone can join. Go to amac.us/starns. That's amac.us/starns. I got your calls coming up on the Todd Starnes Show.
There's no doubt the nation is facing a financial crisis because of the Biden administration's economic policies. Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and no doubt our economy is in trouble, and you need to take steps to protect yourself. Now, if all your money is tied up in stocks, bonds, and traditional markets, you are vulnerable. Gold is one of the best ways to protect your retirement. No matter what happens, you own your gold. It's real, physical. It's always been valuable since the dawn of time. Legacy Precious Metals is the company I trust for investing in gold, and they can help you roll your retirement account into a gold-backed IRA where you still own the physical gold. They can also ship the gold and precious metals safely and securely to your house. Did you know $1 million worth of gold can actually fit inside a shoebox? Call Legacy at 866-528-1903 or visit them online at legacypminvestments.com. That's legacypminvestments.com.
Hey, welcome to the Todd Starnes. If you're just joining us, I'm Mary Walters sitting in for Todd. Todd will be back later this week. He's not going anywhere, so you have nothing to worry about. He will be back. 844-747-8868. Let's go to New Orleans, shall we? So the mayor of New Orleans is a Democrat. It's a woman named, not to assume her gender, LaToya Cantrell. And so officials are trying to determine if the mayor has to repay almost $30,000 in taxpayer money for trips that she took to France and Switzerland. Now, I never understood when these mayors say, I've got to go to Ireland, or these governors have to go to, why do you have to go to Ireland for? The governor of my state had to go to Ireland. I'm like, really? Because his last name's Murphy. So I'm like, okay, was this a family to, you know, go see the place of your birth? Or is this really, how are you helping the state by traveling to Ireland? I don't understand. What couldn't be done over a Zoom call? I was curious. But so they use their power and privilege, and of course they travel and we pay for it. So she's had a bunch of brushes with some ethics problems in the past, and so she's saying that she's not going to repay the money. She took this summer. She went from Washington Dulles, I don't know, to Switzerland. Now I'm sure their flight's leaving out of Louisiana. But I'm sure she probably didn't want to transfer. Like, she wanted to fly from New Orleans to, you know, JFK or Washington Dulles. And so she, I don't know how she got there. But anyway, so she refuses to refund the money. And technically, she's supposed to refund the money because she flew first class. So during a press conference, she was asked about this. Listen to her response, because there's more to this. Listen to her response.
All expenses incurred doing business on behalf of the city of New Orleans will not be reimbursed to the city of New Orleans. One thing is clear. I do my job, and I will continue to do it with distinction, with dignity and integrity every step of the way. And so that's what I have to say on that.
Is it me, or was that one of the most condescending sound bites you've heard in a while? I do my job. I was like, wow, that was dripping with just disdain for taxpayers, was it not? She said during her press conference, my travel accommodations are a matter of safety, not luxury. Listen what else. Now, this is the part, excuse me, that is getting all of the play here. She says, as all women know, our health and safety are often disregarded, and we are left to navigate alone. As the mother of a young child whom I live for, I'm going to protect myself by any reasonable means in order to ensure I am there to see her grow into the strong woman I am raising her to be. Anyone who wants to question how I protect myself just doesn't understand the world that black women walk in. What she just told us is that because she is black, economy is not safe for black women. Because she needs to keep herself safe. And if you question that, you do not understand the world that black women walk in. What? What? I thought the economy part of the plane gets to the airport at the same time as the first class part of the plane, right? Right? And there's only that little curtain that separates them. Like, I love... when, because I was sitting in the front row of, you know, the back of the class steerage, you know, back of the plane, and, you know, so I could see first class, I could smell the good food they were getting, and I'm in that first row of the bulkhead there, and I love when the flight attendant closes those curtains, like, okay, you shall not see what is happening here. She closed the curtains. It's so dramatic. It just cracks me up. So she said, I just find this hilarious. Now, the city's travel policy says employees must buy the lowest fare, and if you choose to upgrade, you are responsible to pay the difference. Now, there is currently a recall petition out for this woman. They want her out of office, but I don't understand how this makes her less likely to not be recalled, although people vote Democrat or for whatever else. She's a woman or she's black or she's a Democrat, whatever, they're going to vote for her. But the fact that she uses, plays the race card, dear Lord, her race card has probably been played so many times, there's not much left to it. So flying economy at taxpayer expense to go to Switzerland, where they're going to pay for all your food and your hotel and everything else. And I guarantee you she's not staying at like a Super 8 in Switzerland or the whatever the Swiss equivalent is of where you and I would stay. She's probably staying in a 5-star, super expensive restaurant in, hotel in Switzerland. But so they said, could you please pay $30,000? $30,000 of taxpayer money. No, you know why? Because I'm a black woman and I am not safe if I don't sit in first class. What the heck does she think goes on in economy? Now, I understand there's tons of fights on planes these days, but honestly, they just wrap you with duct tape now and put you back in the chair and they just, you know, keep you there until the marshals come and they take you off the plane. But I thought that was just unbelievable. Okay, coming up, Congressman Ralph Norman will be joining us. We're going to talk to him about what is happening in the news and whether the GOP is out of touch with you and me. That's next on the Todd Stern Show.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to the Todd Starnes Show. If you're just joining us, I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Todd. Todd will be back with you later this week. As I told you, joining us right now, Congressman Ralph Norman out of North Carolina. Congressman, thanks for joining us. Great to talk to you again.
My pleasure to be with you, Mary, and I'm in South Carolina. North Carolina is our sister state, but we love North Carolina and South Carolina.
I am so sorry, South Carolina. I apologize for that. My bad.
No problem at all.
I, you know how I can tell South Carolina? That accent. I love the Southern accent. I'm so sad to see people trying to get rid of their Southern accents. They should never do that because it's so American. I just love it. It's great.
The biggest laugh I get, Mary, is when I tell people that, you know, I know y'all really think I'm from New York instead of the South. And that normally gets a pretty good laugh.
Yes, I can understand why. So earlier in the show, so we were discussing a candidate in Arizona, Blake Masters, and he's going to be running against Senator Mark Kelly. And right now he's down 47 to 45, you know, 45, 47 percentage points. And it looks like, you know, according to the polls, he's going to just be a wash. Oh, Mark Kelly's going to win. But the race has been labeled a toss-up by the Cook Political Report. So I don't put a whole lot of stock in polls, especially when I look at Cook and says it's a toss-up. Why did the GOP pull their ads supporting Blake Masters? Why did they just give up and walk away?
Well, and you know, Mitch McConnell controls that, Mary, and it is absolutely inexcusable that we have a chance to elect a conservative senator to replace a liberal senator in Mark Kelly. And to have it, you know, I would argue the 47-45 advantage Kelly has is nothing. You know, it's the old saying in politics, if you're within 5 to 8 points, you've got a real shot. Some say even more. But it just shows you how out of touch Mitch McConnell is, and he's not interested in the country. For him not to take a stand for a man that's won the Republican primary, for a man that is a conservative who is going on the American First agenda, and for him to pull the ads, I mean, where's he going? That's just like saying we're going to support Democrats instead of Republicans. So I don't understand it. It doesn't surprise me, to be honest with you. But this should be an easy amount of money to commit to and stand behind a guy that will stop a Senate that's, you know, has done so much damage to this country.
Yeah, it does. And so how does he constantly wind up in leadership? Why does he always get the votes from the Republicans?
Well, you know, he gets, you know, all of us are elected and have our own districts. You look at, I get that question all the time about Nancy Pelosi. Why is she continually elected when she's, and I said, well, look at her district. She brings the money home. She's, you know, I assume takes care of the ones that put her back in office. But, gosh, if there's anybody that needs to be replaced, it's Nancy Pelosi. But the voters just aren't going to do it.
No, why do Republicans, why do the Congress people vote for Mitch McConnell to lead them?
Well, I think it's money. I think he doles out money to the candidates within the party in the Senate that keeps the power in his corner. This should disqualify Mitch McConnell to do this, particularly when the Senate is split 50-50.
Yeah.
And to do this is outrageous. So this ought to be a wake-up call to our two senators, Lindsey Graham and Tim Scott, to flat-out raise the issue. Why are we having the minority leader of the Senate make this kind of judgment call that's hurting the country? And I think that Masters, this will probably help him. I think he will get the money, and it's not just about money. If it were about money, Hillary Clinton would be president today over Donald Trump. If it's about money, Terry McAuliffe would have won his race, but he didn't. And so people are wanting to change, and I think this in Arizona, you will see Mark Kelly victorious, and I think without Mitch McConnell's money, which, again, is no reason at all that he should have pulled that.
One of the things that Blake Masters has said is that the GOP establishment is out of touch. And I wonder if that is what's coming into play here. Mitch McConnell's been in Washington forever. And having worked in Washington, D.C., I know what the feel is there. I know what a company town it is. And so he doesn't want to leave because he's making a lot of money. Mitch McConnell is, obviously. You're there long enough. You get the connections. You make a lot of money. That's part of the game. So does that make people like Mitch McConnell and others out of touch?
Yes, it does. It puts them, you know, once they get elected, they're 6 years. The fact that, you know, in politics, the founders didn't intend, one, to make a career out of something that should be a job that you do what you think is right and go home. Now, I don't know what the magic term limit should be. You know, my bill calls for 2 House terms and 1 Senate term, or 2 Senate terms. But regardless of what it is, you know, with Joe Biden being in there half of a century and Mitch McConnell coming up on that, it just shows you there needs to be some type of way to get them out and let them go home and live under some of these laws that they're passing, not based on the amount of money that you make while in Congress and the amount that you're able to dole out to gain favors to keep your power, which is what Mitch and what Nancy Pelosi have done.
Yeah, it's really sad, I think. But I think you're starting to see with some of these America First candidates, which I know the establishment hates so much, but there's a reason why they hate them, and I kind of like that. Moving on, the Vice President Kamala Harris, in an interview, she was speaking at the National Harbor on Saturday in Maryland, and she said that she cannot wait to cast the deciding vote to break the filibuster on voting rights and reproductive rights. I cannot wait. Thanks to, obviously, Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema, that has not happened yet. Do you see the Democrats being successful in breaking the filibuster?
No, because I think Manchin is on record, and Sinema is too, that they oppose it. And, you know, they know that this goes back and forth between who's in the majority and who's in the minority. And it works both ways. But thank God they do have it, because the legislation that she's talking about, voting rights and reproductive rights, I mean, she staked herself out. She does not want voter ID, photo voter ID. She wants abortion on demand. She thinks abortion is health care. And, you know, those things will alter America as we've never seen before, along with everything else that this administration is doing. And Kamala Harris, I know that's what she wants, but I don't think she's going to get it, because I don't think, how does Joe Manchin walk it back in reverse in her? Him nor Kristen Sinema. How does she walk it back? I don't think they can.
Well, that goes into the next topic I wanted to talk to you about is, you know, Joe Manchin also said he was against all this big spending and then voted for it, right? They gave him a little bit of a deal, and he got a little bit of an energy deal on the side in the Inflation Reduction Act, which I think is a hilarious name for this thing. So it has to do with permitting reform. And so now the far left in their party is very upset about that. I kind of think that if they screw Manchin over with this and they take that out of this bill or change it in some way and they get the reform in that they want, I think Joe Manchin just salts the earth at that point. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. And I think you're seeing a further split in their party. I mean, how hypocritical. The Democrats have to come out against this. I mean, Bernie Sanders, Chuck Schumer is going to have to take a position on this. I mean, what Joe Manchin did was, you know, he's sped up the approval process for mines, oil wells, and gas pipelines, which this administration has cut completely off for America. So, you know, I think they've got a fight brewing. I'm not for. We've got a solid group of Republicans who are not going to vote for any passage of any spending legislation until we take back control. And I'm glad the 72 House Democrats that I think wrote the letter, including the fact that they just don't want to see their environmental shutdown funding in this package, because they don't like oil and they don't like natural gas. So September 30th is coming pretty quick, and I think you'll see, hopefully we'll stop the whole bill and bring on a government shutdown. I'm at the point now, with what they're doing that's damaging this country so much, and this Inflation Reduction Act is anything but that, we need to stop the whole thing, and I'm glad it's doing it and glad they're using that issue. But they had to, Mary, because they're staked out on it. They can't give this silver parachute to Joe Manchin.
Yeah, it's interesting. You also bring up, you know, shutting down the government. Federal funding runs out September 30th, and so Congress is going to pass a continuing resolution rather than a full funding package. We always hear about these continuing resolutions. Could you just very quickly explain to people what the continuing resolution is?
It's a stopgap measure. Instead of passing a full-blown budget, it's just a stopgap measure with dollars that end at a certain date. I don't know what this what they will pass on this, but what the problem it poses, particularly for the military, because they have to redo all the leases, they have to. It really hinders, you know, their projects going forward, which is a national issue with our military. So what they'll do is, I assume, put something up. They'll keep spending where it is. There are those of us who do not want, we want spending at 2019 levels. Chip, forget his, a couple of us who are wanting numbers, the math to go back to 2019. Chip Roy.
Chip Roy, I was going to say. I didn't want to interrupt you.
No. So I think Chip's proposal I've signed on to, and others have too. But we don't want any more spending and anything because we're already in a hole. And with what this administration has done with this country, to this country, with, you know, not just the Inflation Reduction Act, but, you know, the so-called voter rights bill, which is nothing more than a, you know, they're shutting down the voter IDs all across this country. So, that's what they're talking about.
But here's what bothers me when we get to this point, because it happens all the time. It happens every year. And I think most Americans look at this and go, how did you not know this was coming? Like, we all know that the spending, you know, runs out. We all know that we need to come up with a budget for the next year. And every year, like clockwork, we wind up with continuing resolutions and we wind up with all this other stuff that to delay this. And the Democrats every single time blame the Republicans. And they go, well, they won't vote for this. If they don't vote for this spending, then, you know, guess what? The military is not going to get paid. And I thought they were for the military. How do the Republicans allow this to continually happen year after year after year?
Well, we should. I mean, the Democrats and the Republicans are not completely blameless on this over the years, because you're right. We know the budget has to be dealt with every September 30th. And the fact that they let it run out and then use continuing resolutions to get what they want in spending. Well, both parties, you know, we're at the end of the runway with spending. So unless we start saying no, and there are a lot of us that are going to take the position that we're not voting for anything that's not offset with cuts and shut the government down. I mean, it's something that they use as leverage, but we've got to have the spine to say no. We're not going to bend for that, and hopefully we will.
So just, I have 30 seconds because Kyle's yelling at me, but I have to ask you, this credit card, there is, and they're going to have a code now for credit card purchases if you buy a gun. Normally it went under sporting goods, but now they're going to have a separate code for if you purchase a gun. It'll show up on your credit card so the credit card company knows that you bought a gun, and they say this is going to stop mass shootings. Is there any way for Congress to stop this from happening?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, with this Democrat Party in control, no. But we're going to fight it. But the ISO code that they're talking about is just another step to take away our freedoms. And, you know, there is no gun violence. There are people violence. I've never seen a gun to jump out and commit violence in and of itself. But credit card companies, I hope, will reject it.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to. It's just another, it's really just another step towards a national registry. Sir, we've run out of time, but thank you so much. I love when I get to speak with you because it's just such an interesting conversation and you're just so honest. Thank you so much and good luck in November.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it, Mary.
Absolutely. Congressman Ralph Norman, you're listening to The Todd Stern Show. Mary Walter with you in for Todd Starnes. Don't forget, Thursday evenings at 7:15 p.m. Eastern Time, I have a live podcast. If you go to YouTube, just search for Mary Walter Radio. And if you're on Getter, just search for Mary Walter, and you can join us, leave comments. We have a fun time. And also, later tonight, 4:35 p.m. Eastern Time, I will be on Newsmax TV on the Chris Salcedo Show. Join me there. Coming up here in less than 10 minutes, Caroline Levitt, she is running for the U.S. House. She wants to represent New Hampshire's 1st Congressional District. She has a very interesting race coming up, so we will talk to her coming up next. First, I have to share this with you. I found this is just a fun little story. There was a study that was done in the U.K., and it involved 30 adults. Half of the adults, all these adults were either obese or overweight. And they followed them for 4 weeks. They put them in an experiment for 4 weeks, and they followed one of two diets. So for 2 weeks, half of the group ate 45% of their daily calories at breakfast, 35% at lunch, and 20% at dinner. The other half consumed 20% of their calories for breakfast, followed by 35% at lunch, and then 45% at dinner. Because you always hear that if you want to lose weight, what do? You eat your heaviest, biggest meal at the for breakfast, at the beginning of your day. And it's like, that's why Americans are so fat, because we eat a big supper, you know, we eat this big dinner. And in Europe, they eat a big lunch, and then just have, you know, like cold cuts or something like that for dinner. You know what they found out? And then they switched the regimen for the two groups, right? So they did it for another 4 weeks. So it was 4 weeks and 4 weeks. They ate, both groups ate a little bit more than 1,700 calories a day. And they kept track of what the foods were. And the foods were actually prepared for them and given to them. But you know what they found out? It doesn't matter when you eat. It doesn't affect your metabolism or weight loss. They said both groups, because they were on controlled diets, they were being given the food, both groups did lose about 7 pounds on average. So it didn't matter when you ate your meal. So what they're saying is that whole thing about eat a really big breakfast and then eat fewer calories for dinner is a myth. And they said one of the reasons that people may think it works, and one of the reasons it may work for some people, is that if you eat a big, hearty breakfast, the rest of the day you are less likely to be hungry. The group that did that reported less hunger as the day went on. So they were less likely to snack. They were less likely to, you know, reach for something else, or eat a, you know, super big lunch or something. So that part of it may work. So when I was really fat and trying to lose weight, I used to eat ice cream for breakfast, saying, I'm going to get all my calories in the morning. And guess what? I didn't lose any weight. I wonder why. Okay, Caroline Leavitt will be joining us next here on the Todd Starn Show.
I love the fierce, freedom-loving independence. We love you. The flinty New England strength.
Live free or die.
As the Democrats' motto is, live free or run for re-election. New Hampshire, you are warriors. And you understand the value of standing and fighting.
All right, that was Ted Cruz endorsing our next guest, Caroline Leavitt. She is from New Hampshire, and she is running for the U.S. House. Caroline, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Mary. I really appreciate it.
Now, I have to tell you, so I saw that endorsement, and I knew we were having you on the show, so I did a little research into you. I hope you don't mind. It's got a little stalking, you know. But you're in very interesting, and I was reading about you, and I was reading about what you did. You're going to be 25 if you win. You're going to be 25 if you defeat Chris Pappas, who is a two-term incumbent, very, very young. And one of the things I have noticed lately is we're seeing a lot of young faces come out on both the Democrat and the Republican side. And maybe I'm noticing more on the Republican side, because that's what I'm following a little bit closer. Why is that?
Well, thank you so much. And frankly, I think it's a great thing that young people on both sides of the aisle are stepping up to run for office, because the old, tired and stale and corrupt ways of Washington, D.C. gotta go. I mean, there's been people in D.C. that have been down there clinging to power, mooching off of the taxpayers twice as long as I have been alive. And frankly, that's one of the reasons I decided to step up and run for Congress, especially as a young conservative, where our party, our America First movement, is lacking young, energetic, conservative voices who are going to stand up for conservative values, love of God, love of family, love of freedom, love of country, that we're desperately lacking in our culture, our society. A huge part of my campaign has been talking about the culture war that is really brainwashing and indoctrinating my generation of Americans. And I feel very strongly about the need to stand up and fight back against it.
It's I'm so fascinated, because this to me is such an incredible topic that a lot of people aren't really looking at right now. And I think it is so important, because you talk about the culture war and to be conservative the way you are. And I'm going to go into a little bit about, you know, your path so far, which is amazing for someone who is as young as you are. Why do you think you were able to buck that indoctrination? And I will tell you, this is kind of a two-part question, I guess. Why were you able to buck it? And is the pendulum swinging the other way as we go on in time, that, you know, the cool thing now is to be anti-establishment?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I was raised in a small business family here in the district I'm running in, New Hampshire's First. This is my home seat. I was educated here, went to college here, and really had the blessing of a lifetime working for President Trump in his White House. Exactly. I was one of three assistant press secretaries that served alongside Kayleigh McEnany. So I had a very close front-hand seat to the corruption and the establishment and the swamp in Washington, D.C., and I felt very compelled after the 2020 election to continue that fight that President Trump began. And so I've been pounding the pavement, meeting with voters and people across my home state over the last year, putting together a winning campaign. The polls open in about a little bit more than 12 hours from now, and we're in a real position to win this race because people don't want career politicians. They're done with the puppets of the swamp, and I'm running against one of them. In fact, the establishment in D.C. has spent $6 million against me over the last couple of weeks to slow down our momentum with the people to ensure their hand pick in the race is elected tomorrow. However, it's not going to work. The people are wiser than the establishment thinks that they are. And I'm very proud of the America First campaign we've put together over the last year.
Now, your opponent, the primary opponent, there are several running, but you're speaking about Mowers, right? Who is running against you, and he is the one. He is also a former Trump aide. But from what I understand, the National GOP has spent about $4 million in ads for him, correct?
That's correct. And let me just clarify, Matt Mowers was the former chief of staff to Dr. Deborah Birx, who was in cahoots with Dr. Fauci to manipulate COVID-19 data, lie to President Trump, and force millions of Americans into lockdown, shut down our businesses, and close our schools. So while he was filling for Dr. Birx and Fauci, I was working alongside Kayleigh McEnany to get honest information to the American people and fight back against the corrupt fake news media that was slandering our president and all of those of us who believe in him every day. And the establishment knows that Matt Mowers will be an easy rubber stamp for them. They know he can be controlled. He'll vote whichever way the party tells him to. And they fear that I won't, because I've been an unapologetic America First voice over the past year, taking positions that Republican leadership may not have agreed with. And I'm proud to be supported by Freedom Caucus fighters such as Jim Jordan, Senator Ted Cruz, Lauren Boebert, and Byron Donalds will be in New Hampshire tonight campaigning with me. So if voters in New Hampshire are listening, look, you have a clear contrast in this race. Do you want the homegrown freedom fighter or the puppets for the D.C. swamp? That's what this race has come down to, and I believe we're going to win tomorrow.
When you say America First agenda, what does that mean for you?
It means putting our people first. It means unleashing the might of our American economy, bringing jobs back home, slashing regulation, reducing red tape, lowering taxes, putting more money in the wallets of hardworking folks like my family and so many families across New Hampshire. It means shutting down our southern border and not allowing illegals to invade. There's been more than 4 million illegal aliens flowing into our country freely over the last year and a half. That's more than there are law-abiding citizens in my great state of New Hampshire. That's a complete dereliction of duty, and that's putting America last. It means unleashing the might of our domestic energy production and ensuring that we are utilizing the resources here at home, not begging the Saudis or the Russians to produce more oil for us, but allowing our hardworking oil workers and coal miners in West Virginia and across our country to produce oil for the American people. It means putting our country, our people, our economy, our military first. And we've really seen the opposite of that with this administration. Joe Biden and the Democrats, enabled by my Democrat opponent, who we will beat in November, put America last. And it's not only hurting Americans here at home, but it's also hurting our standing abroad. Our adversaries around the globe are laughing at us and taking advantage of us. We must put America first again. And this election is so critical in doing that.
No, absolutely. Now, you say you have several Congress men and women, very impressive, obviously, very America First candidates who are coming to help you and to campaign for you, whereas your opponent has the establishment GOP who are pumping money into ads for him. Does this really illustrate what is starting to look like a pretty big divide in the Republican Party?
I believe the party, the future of the Republican Party, is unequivocally being America First. I was the spokeswoman for Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, actually, following the 2020 election. And I was there when we ousted Liz Cheney from the House leadership position and got Elise the job, because Liz Cheney was betraying Republican voters across this country. And she was siding with the Democrats. She was propagating the sham January 6th committee hearings as if somehow the American people care about that when we're facing record high inflation, a wide open southern border. Bureaucrats are labeling parents as domestic terrorists for showing up to school board meetings. And you have weak Republicans like Liz Cheney talking about January 6th. So these are the type of leaders that no longer exist in our party. And the future of the GOP is America First. And I'm proud to be the only America First candidate in this race in New Hampshire. And I believe that's why we've earned significant support from the people here.
It is, I guess, the blind eye that I think is kind of part of what the Republican Party is, and I think it has to do with a lot of the things that you've talked about. The age, you know, and that's both Democrats and Republicans. The establishment's just pretty old, and they've been there forever. You know, would you vote for term limits that would be imposed on yourself, even if you should happen to make it to Washington?
Absolutely. In fact, I signed the United States term limits pledge on day one of my campaign because I feel so strongly about the need to shake up Washington, D.C. and ensure that we're electing representatives who are truly for the people and working by the people as our founding fathers originally intended. Washington, D.C. is swampy, not just because it's hot in the summer months. It's a swamp because people stay down there for so long that they're bought and paid for by the lobbyists on K Street and the special interest groups, and they're not truly thinking about their constituents. You know, for example, my establishment handpicked opponent, Matt Maurer, refuses to respond to the question of whether or not he would have voted to send $54 billion more dollars over to Ukraine. He couldn't answer that question because the corrupt establishment in D.C. wanted that bill to pass. However, I came out and unequivocally said I would not have voted for that funding if I was elected to be the congresswoman for New Hampshire's first district. It's my goal to put the people first. And during a record high inflation crisis, I think it's a dereliction of duty to steal $54 billion from the people, send it to a country far away to secure their border while our own border is completely insecure and there's an invasion in our country.
How do we get more young people involved in politics and more young people who are involved in a way of, you know, not just looting a city because they didn't get their way, but to work in a useful way the way you are doing at such a young age?
Well, my campaign, not only, you know, we don't just talk the talk on that. We actually walk the walk. And we've been putting in the work, making a steadfast commitment to reaching out to younger voters here in New Hampshire. We've done it in a few ways. First, in-person events. There's no more effective means to pulling someone onto your team than looking them in the eyes and talking about the issues. And I'm the only candidate in this state who has gone to every single college campus in the district, not once but twice. We've hosted a college campus tour, much to the dismay of the very liberal administrations at these schools. But we talked to the students directly. We've also been targeting them on social media. I run all of my social media accounts myself and speak directly to my followers, many of whom are younger voters. And that's how we're going to break through the mold. You know, the reality is Generation Z and millennial Americans consume their news and read up on the days, you know, the daily events on social media. So if we have folks that can speak to them directly and can really resonate, it's a very effective tool. You know, I'm proud of the army of volunteers that we've put together on this campaign, many of whom are college students, high school students, who are very enthused about the fact that a younger person is running. They've been knocking hundreds of doors for me every single day throughout this entire summer, and they're the reason that we're going to win tomorrow.
Well, I wish you the best of luck tomorrow, Caroline Leavitt. I get the funny feeling that even if you do not prevail tomorrow, we're not done hearing from you. I get the feeling that I'm probably going to be interviewing you again somewhere down the road because you are quite impressive and very young. And boy, do you have, you've got what it takes to run. I think a lot of people have good ideas, but they don't have what it takes to run. So best of luck to you. And thank you so much for your time today on the Todd Starn Show.
Well, thank you, Mary, and anyone listening in the 1st District. I humbly ask for your vote tomorrow, and we will prevail. It will beat our far-left Democrat, and we'll put America first again in Congress. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Best of luck. 844-747-8868 is my number if you would like to join me. Love to have you. I want to talk about this and talk about, you know, younger people. I love that younger people are getting involved in politics because I think that there's just been, as I said, just this dearth. There's been a vacuum, and I think we need younger people. And I think you're going to start to see more people like Caroline from the younger generation who didn't buy into the indoctrination. And I also think that the pendulum is swinging. I think the pendulum is starting to go the other way. It's cool now to be anti-establishment. What do you want to be when you're a kid? Like when you're young, when you're in college, not necessarily a kid, but when you're younger and in college, you don't want to be like everybody else. You don't want to conform. You don't want to be part of the establishment. You know, you want to be anti-establishment. You know, think Bernie Sanders in the 60s and Haight Ashbury, you know, against the man. Well, now Bernie Sanders and everybody he hung out with at Haight Ashbury is the man, right? Like Bernie Sanders is the man. So he stands for everything he stood against when he was younger. And I think that's part of maturing and growing up as well. So now what the ultimate thing is if you want to be that revolutionary, if you want to be, you know, shocking and what you are when you're in your 20s, right? Yeah, I'm going to make the world a better place. Well, what do? You go against the grain. You go against the establishment. So I wonder if we start to see more young candidates like her, because that's what it is to be anti-establishment and to be different. Do you want to be the ultimate in being, you know, the ultimate in rebelling? Is being a conservative now. You got to be on the down low. It's got to be quiet. You know, the whole bit. Think about it. All right. I've got more coming up. 844-747-8868. Don't go away. Keep listening to the Todd Starn Show. Mary Walter in for Todd Starnes. Coming up here in about 10 minutes or so, we'll be joined by Congressman Pat Fallon, talk about immigration. Pat, so he is from Texas, so obviously that is a huge topic down there. And some of the statistics that I just saw a story that just made me shudder when I saw it, and I'm going to share that with him and with you. And if you want to join me, you are more than welcome to do so. Just very quickly, when we had Congressman Norman on, I very briefly got to mention to him about a story that I think is interesting, especially if you are a gun owner or if you, you know, believe in preserving gun rights. I think this is a story that you probably want to know about. There's an international organization, and this international organization is responsible for creating merchant category codes for credit card purchases. So it'll be, you know, apparel, sports, restaurants, that type of thing. And it has to be worldwide, because if you go to Europe and you buy something over there and you use your American Express card or whatever, I would assume you use for international travel. I don't know these things. You need a universal code. So, you know, the credit card company, I guess, I don't know why the credit card company needs to know this. I have no idea. But apparently, maybe it's to make it easier for you when you get home and you can see what all your purchases were. So the International Organization for Standardization is the name of the company. And they have a subgroup called the Registration and Maintenance Management Group. It's a very, very big organization. And they met to discuss a request made by Amalgamated Bank, which sounds like something that would be in a Bugs Bunny cartoon. Amalgamated Bank. And Amalgamated Bank wants a code just for transactions made at gun stores. Now, the International Organization Standard spokesperson told this a group, the Center Square, that the Registration and Maintenance Management Group members couldn't decide whether to approve this application or not. So it went to leadership, and they decided, yes, we're gonna create a code just for gun store purchases. Letitia James, the New York Attorney General, California Attorney General Rob Bonta, sent a letter to chief executives at American Express, MasterCard, and Visa, urging them to support a merchant category code. So this looks like it's on its way. This is what's going to happen, because prior it was under sporting goods. But now it's going to have a special line item for gun purchases, purchases made at gun stores. Now, they say they're going to help stop gun trafficking and keep New Yorkers safe. Here's my problem with this. I don't buy this for a hot second. When I see that it's the Attorney General of New York, the Attorney General of California, my radar goes up and I'm like, okay, what's this really about? This, to me, is a backdoor into a gun registry, which we know you're not allowed to have. But if they can pull your credit card receipts, look at them, and see what you've bought, they can very easily figure out what kind of guns you own, right? Can't say it's a gift. Can't do that. So this should scare everybody. This is Big Brother looking once again. They're going to know everything about you, and this is what they want to know.
From the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us, that's right, I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh yeah.
I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Todd. Todd will be back in a couple of days. He is traveling and speaking to a bunch of people all over the country. And so he will be back with you. Joining us now, Congressman Pat Fallon out of Texas. Congressman, thank you for joining us.
Mary, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's so good to talk to you again.
I know. It's great. You're making my day.
Oh, you say that to all the girls. Look at you. You are down there at the border. You have Texas, you know, is a border state, and your amazing governor has driven that point home to the cities of New York and Washington, D.C. and Chicago, and supposedly Philadelphia is next in line, and getting a lot of blowback for that. How is all of that being funded?
As far as the buses themselves, I believe the state of Texas is picking up the tab. And the illegal migrants have to voluntarily go. But I do think it's funny, the incredible hypocrisy that the Democratic leadership is showing. I mean, if they didn't have double standards, Mary, they wouldn't have any standards at all. Because you sent up a few hundred illegal migrants to Philly or New York City or D.C., they call it a humanitarian crisis. Hello, there are millions in Texas, millions in Arizona and California. And they don't care. So if they, I think personally, anybody that crosses the border illegally should obviously be deported. But if we can't do that, then they should be sent to sanctuary cities, because apparently that's what these folks want, to let them bear the direct burden of the consequences and costs.
And I have to tell you, it is such a boss move by Governor Abbott. It really, truly is. It is trolling. I mean, like, that to the nth level. That is just varsity level trolling. And it gets the point across. He managed to get coverage on these liberal outlets that were ignoring the border and acting like there wasn't a problem at all. So it was a brilliant move on his part, and it probably is less expensive for the citizens of Texas to do this than it is to pay for health care in your hospitals and having these kids in your schools, because now you got to pay for their schooling and everything else. So in the end, it's probably actually cost effective, right?
Mary, it's not even close. It's absolutely, you buy a bus ticket and then you're done. Yeah, it's way more cost effective. I was in the state legislature in Texas for 8 years, and it cost the state mass unlawful migration cost the state billions of dollars. And not, as you mentioned, in education costs, but in health care costs. And then, unfortunately, there is a smaller element that is criminal. And that has a bearing on the communities as well. And what we've seen, and this is what the left isn't talking about, mainstream media doesn't want to address this at all, there's been a great awakening along the Texas border on our side. that is about ethnically about 85% Hispanic. And they are leaving the Democratic Party in droves and coming to the Republican Party because they see firsthand what mass unlawful migration gets you. They see firsthand what far left-wing policies that put America last get you. And they're tired of it, and they want what's best for our country, their country. And they know that is with the Republican Party and not the Democrats.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, though, at the rate at which illegals are coming into this country, by the time Joe Biden is no longer president, we're probably going to be on course to have a good, let's see, 9 million. If he's averaging 2 million a year, we're looking at about 9 million.
9 million more illegals. You know, the estimates range from 16 to 20 million as of a year ago. And Biden is, you know, looking to almost double that in 4 years. It just this to tell the tape, back in April, there were 234,000 illegal border crossings. That was 1,258% higher than the last time President Trump was in office in April. And then in May, it was nearly 240,000, which was 930% worse than the last May that President Trump was in office. And so what you're seeing, and then if you add the known gotaway, you're looking at a million illegals cross the border in the last 4 months alone. It is
stark,
and it is chilling.
Well, yesterday on Meet the Press, the 21st anniversary of September 11th, our Vice President Kamala Harris was asked by the anchor, NBC News anchor Chuck Todd, whether the border is secure. And she declared the border is secure, but she says that the immigration system is broken, and that's Congress's fault. She said there are a lot of problems that we're trying to fix, and she said that they asked Congress to fix to do two things: pass a bill to create a pathway to citizenship. That was the first thing. She said the border's secure, but we have a broken immigration system, in particular over the last 4 years before we came in, and that's what needs to be fixed. I got to ask you, why is Congress not demanding that the president enforce the laws that they have put in place? Because I'm pretty sure immigration law that's been set by Congress does not permit for an open border. Am I right?
You are correct. And there are individual members of Congress, myself included, of course, that are demanding that our border, our immigration laws are enforced. But as a whole, as a body, as a chamber in the House and the Senate, the Democrats have the majority. They have no interest in doing anything. And what Kamala Harris wants to do is codify an open border. And that's no solution. Oh, now it's lawful to have an open border. Okay, what's that going to do? The floodgates will really, truly open that. There are 3.8 million people in the world waiting to come to this country legally. These are the exact kind of folks that you want to come here because they're respecting the laws and the rules of the country that they want to become a part of. And 95% of those people are people of color. So when the liberals start, injecting race into this discussion, it's abhorrent and it's absurd because that has nothing to do with it. It's immaterial. What we want is to take the talent, the best talent the world has to offer. If you want to come here and we have a need, you're a welder, you're a plumber, and you have proficiency in English, and we need that, well, then come on. Now, you're an RN, you're a registered nurse, and we need those, come on. But to sit there and allow folks to just cross the border and claim asylum, when we all know that 99.9% of these folks are economic migrants, they are not political asylum seekers, particularly when you have some that are crossing 7 and 8 countries to get to ours. Once you leave your country, your political asylum claim can be adjudicated in that nation. And so it's not even a crisis anymore. It's a catastrophe.
And it is being engineered by the government. For instance, Biden got rid of the Trump era rule that was known as public charge. A public charge, for people who don't know, is someone who is primarily dependent on government assistance. So the government supplies, they're determined that the government supplies over half of their income. Now, President Trump put in a rule that said, no, you can't come here if you're going to be a public charge. In other words, you can't come here and have the American taxpayers foot your bill for you because you have no skills or you don't know how to support yourself. Joe Biden just got rid of that. What would the point of getting rid of that be for Joe Biden?
Well, to encourage more people to come. I mean,
why?
Because I think, they're looking at the statistics and they see that 3/4 of the descendants of these folks that come across illegally are breaking their way and they're voting Democrat. And now, if they started voting Republican, the wall would be 100 feet high. So let's be honest about things. It's a political calculation. They don't care what it costs in the long term for our country. They are, it's a warped mentality when you really think about it. Because, you know, you'll have discussions with some of these lefties, and they'll say, well, Fallon, your European ancestors came over through, I say, wait a minute, through Ellis Island legally, and you know what they got here, what they got from the government? Nothing.
Right.
Zero. You made it on your own. They were poor and broke in Europe, and they were poor and broke when they got here, but they made a life out of them, and they sacrificed tremendously.
Yes.
And they did it legally. You want that same deal? So when folks come here, they're not going to get any free health care. They don't get free education. They get bumpkins. Then we can talk. But you don't want that. You want us to, and we're already, Mary, I'm sorry to get fired up about this, but we're already a debtor nation. We can't pay our own bills now. It is insane. It's like saying you have a neighbor and, you know, you need to borrow some money. And this guy's got credit card debt and he's got creditors all over his case, and he gets another credit card and he loans you some money. That guy's no hero. He's not moral. He's not doing the right thing. He can't pay his own bill.
Yeah.
And we can't pay our own, and yet we're going to say we're going to take this burden on. It's ridiculous.
So by getting rid of this public charge rule, what programs does that open up to illegals?
Well, I would imagine it would open up a whole bevy of welfare benefits. SNAP and all WIC and all these others that they have. And it's absolutely insane. We don't have the money for this.
No, we don't. But again, this is I truly believe that the Democrats have an America Last policy. They just want you to pay for it. And because we've been talking about this the whole time, the GOP is out of touch with the American people. I truly believe that. I worked in D.C. I know what it's like there. I know what I just couldn't stand the culture of Washington, D.C. It felt very dirty. You know, like when you talk to someone who's trying to talk you into something and you feel like you need a shower afterwards, that's how I felt for the 3 years that I lived in Washington, D.C. at all times. I was like, oh, God, it's just so scummy. And I think because they're out of touch with the people, they've been there too long. And so they don't understand what it's like to have to live in these conditions, what it's like in these towns for these people who don't have private property anymore, because these people are just walking across their land, trashing their land, dirty, filthy garbage, begging for food, knocking on their doors, all of that. They don't get it. And it's really shocking to me that the Republicans have also become out of touch.
Well, you know, some have, of course, and there's others that are excellent public servants and conservative leaders. And that's what, you know, encourages me. And I work in Washington, but I sure as hell don't live there. I mean, I go there, I vote, I do my business, I represent my constituents, and I get the hell home as quickly as I possibly can to Texas, because there's freedom-loving people, and the air here is full of liberty. And that's what you have to stay connected. Quite frankly, I think what we should do is have a part-time Congress like we did in the Texas legislature, where we're in session 5 months and then we're off for 19, because you can do a lot less mischief and damage when you're not in the capital city. But, you know, it is what it is. It's a full-time legislature. But you know, the way you stay connected to your constituents is we have scores of town halls. There are no-holds-barred town halls. People can ask whatever question they want. Have lots of teletown halls. Knock on doors. Stay connected to your constituents, because that's what our job is when we're in the people's house. This is the founding fathers wanted this office to be as close to the people as possible.
So I only have a couple of minutes. So rapid fire here, if we can do that.
Okay. Let's go.
Okay. Will Mayorkas be impeached by the Republicans for he didn't do his job?
I'm going to file articles of impeachment on Mayorkas.
Okay.
So when it has a chance of being heard, which is if we get the majority back November 8th. So I'm going to try, and he should be.
Yes, he absolutely should be. And this is a sad story that comes out of Eagle Pass. We've heard so much of Eagle Pass. But the Eagle Pass government of that little town in Texas is requesting refrigerators to store migrant bodies because the drownings are overwhelming the mortuaries. Why don't Republicans, why are they not hammering over and over and over again the hashtag Biden body bags? Because that's exactly what they should be doing.
A great point, and it should be done, because the left always wants to ignore the human catastrophe and the humanitarian crisis that truly goes on when you have an open and porous border.
They're recovering bodies every single day, 3 months old, and they said it is taking such a toll on this town of Eagle Pass. They're not prepared for an invasion. They were never prepared for an invasion, and that's what they have. And the workers, the fire department, the rescue squads, those people who have to go out and get these bodies and their children, it is taking such a toll on them mentally that they're starting to break down. And the Republicans, to me, I don't understand why the vast majority, obviously not you, but the vast majority, at least it seems to those of us sitting out here, I'm like, where's the marketing? Where's the screaming? Democrats would be messaging this like crazy.
Every chance I get to talk to the media, whether it's on television or radio, I want to talk about the fact that the federal government is not controlling our southern border, but the Mexican drug cartels are. And there's over 100 million people in Mexico. So it's pretty much never mind Central America as well, the rest of the world. There's an unlimited supply of people. So to the cartels, they're just a commodity. They put a price tag on it. And the cartels make somewhere between $25 and $30 billion a year with illegal narcotics trafficking. But with human smuggling, now that's up to, because they charge about $4,000 a head. And if you don't have one of their magic bracelets, they're liable to murder you on the spot. So most people pay. Or they are indentured servants when they get here. So slavery, is alive and well in the United States. It's awful. But they're making about $12 to $15 billion now in addition to their illegal drug with the human smuggling. Again, the left wants to ignore that. We need to educate the American people. I want to thank you for having me on so they understand what's really going on and what the costs are.
Absolutely. Congressman Pat Fallon, thank you so much for joining me. Good luck in November. I believe you have a race, right, in November?
Yes, I have a Democrat that wants to fundamentally change America, just like Barack Obama and Joe Biden. But I think we're looking pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to say, in Texas, I think you're okay. Well, good luck. Thank you for taking the time to join me. It's always a pleasure when I get to speak with you. Thank you so much.
No, Mary, an honor. Thanks. Take care. God bless.
God bless. Coming up on the Todd Starn Show, we're going to talk a little bit about the FDA and COVID vaccines. That is next here on the Todd Starn Show. Hey, Mary Walter in for Todd Starnes. Coming up, we're going to speak to a gentleman, actually a friend of mine, about who volunteered at Ground Zero right after 9/11 and volunteering in the community of firefighters and, you know, volunteering in the United States. And it's important to support our organizations and companies that share our values. And Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless carrier. They not only share our beliefs, but they actually do something about it. Patriot Mobile donates a portion of every dollar to organizations that fight for causes that you care about. Switch to Patriot Mobile now and use the promo code Todd to get free activation, and you're going to get a free gift as well. Patriot Mobile has the broadest nationwide coverage and uses the same towers that other carriers use. They have plans to fit any budget, along with great discounts for our veterans and our first responder heroes, as well as multi-line users. Switching to Patriot Mobile, super easy. You just go to patriotmobile.com, all one word, patriotmobile.com/Todd, T-O-D-D. Or you can call their U.S.-based customer service team at 972-PATRIOT. Get your special discount and free premier activation by using the promo code Todd. If you need more details, visit patriotmobile.com/Todd. That's patriotmobile.com/Todd. Or call 972-PATRIOT. That's 972-PATRIOT. Super, super easy. So as I said, we're going to speak to a friend of mine about, who was at Ground Zero, and he has a very cool story that I think you're going to enjoy, because it's a little bit of a different 9/11 story. And it's so different. We haven't really had a chance to get to about how the Democrats quote-unquote commemorated 9/11 yesterday. And some of it to me was just disgusting, you know, comparing, 9/11 to January 6th. January 6th is worse than 9/11, and they're just so shameless. But I said, my friend has also come into possession of a gift from Australia that I thought you'd be interested in hearing about. and how he came into that to have that gift. So that's coming up next here on the Todd Starn Show. To the Todd Starn Show. If you're just joining us, well, where have you been? I'm Mary Walters, sitting in for Todd, and Todd will be back with you later this week. I will be on the Chris Salcedo Show on Newsmax TV tonight around 4:35 Eastern Time. I have to do everything in Eastern Time. It's just easier. Just do the math. It's easier. 4:35 tonight I will be on. That's on Newsmax TV. And we're just waiting on our next guest. Oh, he's here? Yay, we got him. My next guest is a guy named Pete Cagnozzola, and I've known Pete since high school, maybe even junior high. Yeah, I think junior high. And Pete is a volunteer firefighter in New Jersey who went to Ground Zero 9/11 afterwards to help. And he's got a really cool story, and he also has some really cool stuff that he's gotten from Australia. So I'm going to welcome him to the show. Pete, hi.
Mary, hi. How are you?
Good. Notice I didn't call you by your nickname, so I just said, hey, Pete.
All good.
So just tell people briefly, you know, you're a volunteer firefighter in New Jersey. You volunteered. You were on the squad in high school, right?
Just after high school, I got on the department with some of our other classmates, and I served in one fire department for 10 years, and now I have 30 years on the department I'm in right now for a combined 40 years.
Yeah, and we were talking a little bit earlier about volunteering and, you know, why people don't volunteer as much as usual, and we'll get back to that. But I want to start out talking because, you know, we talk about this, Pete and I pretty much do every 9/11, you know, living in New Jersey, growing up in New Jersey, being here, 9/11 was just so close to home for us, and so many of us know people who didn't come home, and or people who went to Ground Zero, like Pete. My uncle was in the World Trade Center, and by the power of God, made it out alive. So, Pete, you went up to Ground Zero. When did you go? How far after the attack?
It was still a rescue at the time. It was 2 days after. It happened on a Tuesday. We were there Thursday and Friday.
Now, why did you go? I mean, did you just do it of your own accord? Did your fire department go? How does that come about?
Yeah, our fire department is 37 miles dead west of Manhattan. And we took a group of us on our own down there and sent guys, you know, to help out any way we could. And we made it in to the debris field and spent, like I said, 48 hours, you know, working alongside of the New York City firefighters.
Can you share with everybody what that was like to be there? Because you can see the pictures, but I don't think seeing the pictures, it's just not the same.
No, it's not. And it's think impossible to describe. It's It was not like anything you've ever seen before or could have prepared for. And, you know, it was devastating. The tough part was seeing all the fellow firefighters from New York City working as hard as they were, you know, scrambling, trying to, you know, hope to rescue their fellow firefighters.
Right. And that was part the part of this that was just so devastating is they were searching for their own. And so these firefighters went from, I know our volunteer fire department went, and, you know, other towns decided, okay, this many people are going to go from here, this many people are going to go from here, and everybody cross-covered if, God forbid, something happened, you know, if there was a fire at home, that type of thing. And it really, I think, brought, obviously, the whole country together, but it brought these smaller groups, it brought firefighters much closer. And I think there's a tight-knit brotherhood of firefighters anyway, right? It doesn't matter whether you're from New Jersey or you're from Tennessee or you're from Georgia, wherever you happen to be from, if you meet somebody else who's a firefighter, there's a certain kinship there, right?
Oh, you couldn't. It's exactly right. Just as you described it, Mary. And you hear it a little bit more today, you know, people calling each other brother within the fire service. But, you know, when you roll the clock back 21 years, boy, that was something to have the New York City firefighters, you know, calling you brother and thanking you for being there. And you know, working alongside of them, your heart really broke.
Of course. Now, did firefighters come from other parts of the country as well, or was it mainly New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, the closer ones?
Yeah, I think that's the majority of the people that were here. But, you know, I can tell you that as a firefighter, I'm sure every fire department wanted to be there. I mean, you just felt like you had to be there and help out any way you can. So, the other fire departments that are further away geographically, although they might not have been there physically, you know, they were, you know, thinking about those guys and wishing they could be there.
So that brings me to the next part of this, and I've been, you know, telling the audience that we were going to talk about this. This really illustrates the brotherhood of firefighters and wanting to be there. And you are in possession of something that's really cool, and I think it came from Australia, correct?
You're exactly right. I had a very good friend who has since passed, whose daughter was our consulate general over in Australia. And if you, you know, Australia, there's not many places further from New York City than Australia. I believe it's about 11,000 miles away. And, you know, they wanted the New York City firefighters to know that they were thinking about them. And they sent us, they brought to her office three fire helmets, white fire helmets with their messages on there to the New York City firefighters. And she did not know how to get them to the United States or where to send them. So her father recommended that they have them sent to me. We ended up taking them to a local cabinet maker here in Bedminster. And the guy did a fantastic job putting them on a plaque and a glass case. And you know, then we had a duty to get them to New York City. What we learned is, you know, the firefighters in New York just got overwhelmed with a lot of things like what I'm describing to you, and they just didn't have a place or a way to display them. So what the decision was made was to put them to good use by you know, putting them in places that would promote the brotherhood of firefighting, to show how united firefighters are and all emergency services. And I don't think it's just the emergency services. I mean, it was everybody that came together. And they go, they're moved around. They go to different firehouses. They've been at the county seat here in Somerset County. They've been to the fire academies. They've been to the state house in New Jersey, and they're used to promote, you know, the brotherhood of firefighting and, you know, remembering the New York City firefighters.
So I just love the story. I think it's so cool. Are you the one who has to take these things everywhere? Are you traveling all over the United States with these helmets?
That's funny. You know, they're available, and we'll make, you know, depending on, you know, the circumstances, it's always nicer when somebody comes and picks them up, but sure, we'll get them to wherever they need to be. What we're just looking for is if it's in an effort to promote the brotherhood of firefighting and draw positive attention to volunteering, we're happy to make them available and try to make something good out of the, you know, what happened that day, try to make something, create something positive out of it.
Were you ever able to get in touch with any of those firefighters to let them know what the helmets are being used for?
We have, and we're gonna reconnect with those guys and let them know how fantastic it's been. We have some of their contact information. When they came to us, we've got the fire companies, because they're chief's helmets, white helmets, and they've got the name of the fire departments on there. So we're gonna let them know, and I'm gonna let them know about your radio show today that they were featured on your show.
Well, that's great. Todd will be very happy. This is syndicated, so it's being heard in quite a large number of areas in the United States. Because I just wanted this story to be told. I thought it was super, super cool. And in I've got a couple minutes here, Pete. I want to talk very quickly. I talked about it earlier in the show about volunteering. You know, you've been doing this for, and I honestly thought you were on the squad in high school, so you've been doing this forever. What is it? Do you see a drop-off in volunteers? Do you see that at all where you are?
Yeah, lives are busier nowadays. Back when I started at the first company that I was in, if we had 70 calls a year, that was a lot of calls. The company I'm in right now, I was chief in 99, and we ran 548 fire calls. So it's changed. It's become a busier business. The requirements are a lot tougher to become a firefighter. It's 110 plus hours just to be able to become a firefighter. So the requirements are a little bit tougher. The demands are higher, the requirements are tougher, and we have seen a drop off. And that's why, you know, these helmets, I think, you know, help promote and hopefully bring more people into the fire service. In the United States, roughly 70% of all firefighters are volunteers.
How much?
Roughly 70%.
See, I wanted you to say that again because people don't know that. Most people do not know that, which is why I wanted you to say that again, because I don't think most people know that. Okay, we have a caller, but I'm going to take this caller after we're done here because I want to continue with you. So, Connor, hang on. I'll get to you ASAP here. So that's amazing, 70%. Most people don't realize that when your house, you know, is on fire and you're losing all of your possessions, you're looking at a very small group of people who are going to come and help you and save you, your pets, whatever it happens to be. And people don't realize that. And I don't think they have an appreciation for it. And I'm really glad you brought that statistic out because it goes a long way, I think, in helping raise awareness because so many people are shocked to find out that their fire department is volunteer. And so you really need to support them and you really need to support them financially, but also volunteer wise and et cetera, because it's really good people who make that happen. And without them, you're going to be paying for it. And I guarantee you will not be as well run as it is when the volunteers are doing it. Pete, we got to run. Thank you so much for joining me.
Mary, thank you so much, and thanks for promoting firefighting. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, Pete. Have a great day. Connor, hang on. I will get to you next. 844-747-8868. Todd Starn Show. Walter sitting in for Todd Starnes. Kyle, just very quickly, if we can go to cut four here, and then we'll go to Connor.
I am stunned that our kids today are not taught about September 11th. You know, people sort of put it behind them, basically saying, you know, it's in the past, we shouldn't talk about it. What if we did that with World War One or World War Two or the Korean War or the Vietnam War or any of the wars? The bottom line is the most devastating battleground in the history of the United States is probably, one of them is probably Ground Zero, where 3,000 people died on the morning of September 11th. Innocent people died on September 11th. You know what? Nobody should forget what happened that day, and I'm stunned that schools around the country are not educating our youth to let them know what happened so they will remember always.
And that was Bernie Kerik talking about the fact that most schools do not require 9/11 to be taught to the kids. We're too busy teaching them about their, you know, their pronouns and all this other stuff, and they can't read, write, and they don't know anything about American history. Let's quickly go to Connor from Boston. Connor, you're on the Todd Starnes Show. Thanks for holding on.
Mary, it's such a pleasure to be with you, and you're doing a great job today.
Thank you.
I'm gonna I'm going to tell you, I also want to thank your previous guest, Pete, for service to our country on that day. I can't even imagine just going to that site and witnessing that firsthand. But the previous clip you had on there, too, about this instance in our school systems where they are not teaching about 9/11. I'm in my 20s, and I can tell you right now, throughout my K-12 education, there was a gradual decline over the years of basically what the significance of 9/11. They're trying to get it to a point where they're trying to whitewash it from our history. They won't actually tell the true events of what happened on that day. And quite simply, they really just need to say, like, a very simple sentence. On this awful day, 2001, 19 Muslims Saudis slaughtered nearly 3,000 American citizens, innocent American citizens, men, women, and children on American soil, a direct attack on our nation. That's really all they need to say. They can go into the events, but that's the main sentence that they need to tell our children. I think the message is very clear from there.
It's interesting because, you know, look what's happening with January 6th. That was an insurrection. It was the worst. We had liberals, we had Democrats get to the microphone and talk about, compare 9/11. Here's Senator Mark Warner. Actually, it's a long cut, but Senator Mark Warner said, talking about 9/11, the stunning thing to me is here we are 20 years later and the attack on the symbol of our democracy is not coming from terrorists, but it came from literally insurgents attacking the Capitol on January 6th. He compared 9/11 to January 6th. They have no problem painting anyone who is a Trump supporter as an insurrectionist, as a terrorist, etc. But you cannot say what you just said because that you are equating all, that people say that's equating all Muslims with the attacks on 9/11. And no one is doing that by saying it. We have no problem saying that it was the Japanese that attacked Pearl Harbor, right? We have no problem saying that. So why can't we say what happened on 9/11? Why can't we say that?
Mayor, what they are looking for with this whole January 6th thing is a replacement for 9/11, which is more politically advantageous to them. And the fact that they can actually say that, use these types of political talking points that their Democrat cronies are cooking up for them, and they sleep at night, is beyond me. God have mercy on their soul.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. Connor, thank you so much for joining me again. Thank you for hanging on. I appreciate it. I love to hear from young people like Connor who are, you know, the pendulum's swinging. I'm telling you, the pendulum is swinging the other way. It's starting to come around. They have saturated our kids with critical race theory, with this pronoun baloney, and all this other stuff. And I think you're starting to see some of it break through. You're starting to see some of these kids break through the noise and realize that, wait a minute, maybe I'm not being told the truth about everything. And I do think, and I'll say this over and over and over again, and I said it during the pandemic was the greatest gift to education in the United States because parents became aware of what their kids were being taught. And once parents became aware of what their kids were being taught, parents, whether they were Democrat or Republican, said, whoa, wait a minute. You're telling my kid what? And they don't like it. And so you're starting it to change. It's why you're starting to see the African-American vote, the Latino vote, the Asian vote, all come towards the Republicans because they value education for their children. That is absolutely why. And it's important. Absolutely important. Thank you so much for letting me join you, letting me sit in for Todd Starnes, Josh, and Grace, and Kyle. Thank you so much. Todd, back with you later in the week. I'm Mary Welter. I'll see you tonight on Newsmax at 4:35 Eastern.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.